From the New York City area, welcome to the Badass Counseling Show, where the master badass himself, Sven Erlandsson, takes you deep and gives balm for the soul, baby.
Greetings, 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 badasses from around the world. It is great to have you here. My name is Sven Erlandsson. I am the host of the Badass Counseling Show, the show where we counsel people experiencing problems in life on our Thursday episodes, on our Sunday episodes, lightning rounds. We answer listener questions such as today. So whether you are tuning in from Helena to Helsinki, Brisbane to Bourges, Joetown to Juneau, or Calgary to Kyoto. Great to have you here. I'm joined in studio by KC over in the booth and Rocket Rob right next to me. Rob, hello. What say ye?
Joetown? What is that?
Joeberg, I should have said. Did I say Joetown?
You may have said Joeberg, but
yeah,
either way.
No, I think I said Joetown. I don't know. Joeberg. Johannesburg.
Oh, Johannesburg.
Yes, yes.
What's the word?
Okay. Love my friends down in South Africa. I've oddly had many, many clients over the years from South Africa, and I always love South Africans. And you and I have some very close South African friends.
Yes, we do. Excellent.
All right. And so, Rob, ready to go today?
Yes, I'm ready for another hour of our usual wit, wisdom, and the occasional attempt at self-deprecating humor.
Well, and hopefully we'll help a person or two on top of that. All right. This is a great question. Michelle Luttrell over on Facebook opens with the question, how do you know if a relationship is right, especially if there's no red flags? Okay. First things first, no red flags. A lot of people who are watching right now are saying, no red flags. Yeah, that never happens. Well, on one hand, there are relationships. If you've actually done the work of working on yourself, you're likely going to attract and not allow into your life someone who hasn't done the work and someone else who has done the work. There are going to be fewer red flags. However, it is inevitable that in any human relationship, friends, lovers, family, what have you, it is inevitable that there are going to be what my father always said in human, any sort of human interaction, human community, there's always going to be the bumping of elbows and the bruising of ribs. It's inevitable. And if you're not having the bumping of elbows and the bruising of ribs, metaphorically speaking, if you're not having hurt feelings now and then, you're likely not living an authentic relationship. One or both parties are not being authentic. Why? Because it's inevitable. Whether it's parents and kids or coworkers at the office, whatever, and neighbors, there's always going to be these times when, you know, we gotta speak up, or you hurt my feelings, or gee, this doesn't quite feel right. I hadn't lived in my city long before I was waving to my neighbors one day, this old Japanese couple, some of them whom over the last 10 years I've fallen in love with. Absolutely. They're in their 80s and I love them. In my first, I'd say week or let's say month, the gentleman called me over and he says, Sven, come on over. We'd love to say hello. He invites me into the home. They show me around the home. They were actually very close friends with the actor Gene Wilder when he was still alive, etc. Anyway, he brought me into his kitchen and he says, you know, Sven, as my wife and I look out on our back fields and into our forest, you know, we see over, you know, when we're having morning coffee and tea, we see over onto your property. What? And I look over and I brought down a very, very large tree that had gotten old and I had stacks of wood all over. But one of the stacks, to keep it dry, I had put a tarp over and it was a two-sided tarp. I mean, obviously. And one color was, one side was brown, one side was blue. And I put the blue side up. So rather than blending in with all the trees, you've got this big blue tarp. And he says, Sven, I don't mean to be rude and it is not my right to ask you this, but it makes me feel like we're back in the homeless section of Tokyo. Not that he came from that, but it reminded him of that. And I said, oh my God, I'm so sorry, et cetera, et cetera. So the point is, even with neighbors who really like each other, there are discomforts. There are things that we got to speak up. And he spoke up and I ran over. I literally tore out of his house right that second. And I went and I flipped the tarp and I came back in. And I said, is the brown better? He says, oh, it's much better. Thank you so much, Sven. And so forth. So in any relationship, there are always going to be what I consider red flags. And people are like, how is that a red flag, Sven? Red flag is like narcissism or extreme selfishness, or that's what real red flags are. And I say, no. Do you want to know why? Because let's just say narcissism doesn't start big ever. It doesn't start big. If you're dating someone, they're not going to, or abuse doesn't start big. They're not going to come in on the second date and punch you in the face. If the girl you're dating is an abuser, you really think that she's going to, you know, punch you in the nutsack on your first date? No. No, it starts small. It always starts small. And maybe it starts early in the dating. Maybe it starts right after the wedding. Do you know how many couples I have counseled over the decades? Or individuals, and we sort of track back. Maybe they've been married 10 years, maybe 20 years, maybe 30 years, maybe 5 years. And we try to track back, when did the trouble start? And they say, oh, 2 years ago or 15 years ago or whatever. But when we dig deeper and dig deeper and dig deeper, looking for signs, looking for indicators, and they say, you know, want to know how many I've had say, it literally started right after the wedding. All the shit started right after the wedding, but it always started small. And a lot of times it'll track back to when they were dating or really early when they were dating. What's my point? Red flags. Before I answer the main question, the red flags question is there are invariably red flags. There are invariably hurt feelings, bruised egos in any relationship, things that just don't feel good. And it starts as, they're not texting you back frequently and that hurts my feelings. Or it starts with they don't apologize for something they did. And I bring it to their attention and they sort of deflect or dodge or deny. That one thing right there, that small thing, if it's not addressed and held firm on, one becomes two. Two becomes seven. Now we've got a fucking pattern. Two is the beginning of a pattern. So if you're not sensing things, if you're not tuned into what doesn't feel okay to me, it's not tuned into the other person, it's tuned into me. If you want to catch red flags, be tuned into you. It's not about watching the other person and listening to the other person per se. It's about how does this action or these words, how does it feel on my skin? How does it feel inside of me? And if you are not tuned into that, you're going to miss them or you're going to let them go or you're going to say, oh, it'll get better or I can fix them or whatever. And it's all bullshit. You just don't want to speak up. And if you speak up, those red flags can be addressed right away and the red flag goes away. So back to your question though, you didn't really ask that, did you, Michelle? You ask the question, how do you know if a relationship is right? And as my grandmother said to my father in Swedish, du vet. When he asked her that same question, when he was 25 years old, Mom, how do you know? And I'm pretty sure he asked it in Swedish. She turned to him and she said, du vet, however the hell she said it, whatever the Swedish accents would be on that. And that simply means you'll know. You'll know. And if you're having to ask yourself, is this the right one? It's not time yet. It's not time yet, because when it is time, you'll know. And so if you're asking, what you really need to be doing in your own self-work and your journaling and so forth is asking yourself the question, why is it I don't know? What is it about this relationship or this person or feelings inside of me that are causing me to think it's not the right one? That you need to be examining that side of the equation, listing all the things that are great. But it's about honestly looking in the face, what doesn't feel right? What doesn't feel good? And really diving into those. Well, what's that about? Well, where am I getting that vibe from? And is that about me? Or is that about the other person? Because a lot of times we'll come into a relationship. Ever had that happen where you got hurt in your last relationship? You come in and you're skittish in this one. You don't want to open up. You're fearful of trusting. Well, that's not about the man in front of me or the woman in front of me. It's not about the other person. If I'm sketched out from my last relationship, that's my shit that I got to fix, or I'm going to be the one fucking up the relationship. So in all cases, if you don't know if this is the right one, you got to be asking yourself why. You got to be asking yourself where it's coming from and let it be. The biggest mistake you can make is not walking away from a relationship that you're not sure about and thinking later, wow, gosh, I really missed out on a great opportunity. The worst mistake you can make is jumping in further into one that you're not sure about. Take your fucking time. There's no rush. Forced action is not inspired action. If it doesn't feel right yet, just let it go for now or just wait. We take so many actions. I had a client just this week and he said, you know, Sven, in my fucking career, the biggest mistakes I've made are the ones where I was impatient and I forced the decision because I was just sick of being on the fence and I didn't have the ability to let it go. Just let it go for now. Just let it go. And you'll know when you've reached master level status of sort of self-mastery, when you can let things go when they don't feel right. Just let it go. It doesn't mean you have to walk away, or maybe you do want to walk away, but it means where you say to yourself, I don't have to make a decision right now, and I'm okay with that. Whereas when we're younger or inexperienced, we say, no, fuck, I got to make a fucking decision. Fuck. Okay, I'll just do it. Mistake. Especially with regard to something like marriage. Because you're locked in, baby. Right? So many people go to someone beforehand and say, it doesn't feel right. And they say, oh, it's just jitters or it's just nerves. Maybe it's not. And maybe that's really fucking awful advice. All right, let's jump on to something new. Rob's got an itch. I can tell. You've got an itch, don't you, Rob?
Yeah, and I'm sure you can scratch it.
Lay it on me.
It's a bit of a sad tale. Married a covert narc with PTSD. He tried to do the work, but he committed suicide. I'm left processing the relationship, the abuse, the death, and the toxic family dynamic that created him. I bought your book, trying to reconcile, suggestions to heal. I cut ties with the family due to the dynamics, but it still hurts immensely.
Yeah, my question would always be, in a situation like that where someone's articulating, you know, that much stuff, right? My first question would always be, what's the hardest part? What's the absolute fucking hardest part right now? Because the hardest part, as you're going through any grieving process, I was just woke up this morning early and I go through and I try to answer as many direct messages as I can or emails or fucking, you know, comments on all the videos and shit I put up, try to help people out. And someone was just saying this morning, boy, I had this and I had that and my child died and then blah, 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 blah. And I realized maybe I didn't grieve everything. And the truth is, at different parts of the grieving process over months or over years or however long it goes, you're going to be grieving different things at different times. So my question would be, what's the hardest part right now? Your husband committed suicide. He did some of the work, as a narcissist, he did some of the work to try to heal and then he ended up killing himself. Bad family dynamic. And I would just say, what's the hardest part right now? What are you grieving the most right now? Or what is making you the most angry right now? And dive the fuck into that. Focus on that one and drill the fuck down. Where is this coming from? How does it feel? Let out those feelings of rage. Scream at God. Scream at the heavens. Scream at whoever or whatever you need to scream at, you know, in the privacy of your own space, and journal the fuck out of it. How am I feeling? What's going on? Write a letter to that person. Maybe it's his brother who's been giving you hell since he committed suicide and saying, it's your fault, bitch. And fuck you, write a letter to him. Whatever you got to do, flush all that shit out. Rob?
Someone else is saying, I didn't address the red flags, and it continued to the point where I was so frustrated and hurt, I blew up at them. I screamed and left.
Yeah. And this is, you know, this is really, it can be any gender or non-gender or whatever, but this is especially a guy thing. One of the things, especially my generation, Rob's generation, the older guys, and still to this day, guys are conditioned to what? Believe, and a lot of women too, so I'm not trying to cut the women out of this because I know a lot of women who are conditioned the same way growing up. What are guys conditioned? Feelings don't fucking matter. Fucking tough enough. Fuck feelings, blah, blah, blah. And so what do? Guys stuff them down when they've been hurt. And I don't mean in some grand way, like, you know, somebody, you know, ran off with your wife or some shit. I don't mean that. I mean the small things. Somebody offended you. Somebody didn't apologize. Somebody didn't stand up and own their mistake. That, yes, I took advantage of you, you know, whatever, and I am sorry. They didn't own it, right? Maybe it's something like that. But whatever. We stuffed those feelings down. And guys think, feelings don't matter. Feelings don't matter. Feelings don't matter. And then what do guys do? They explode when everything gets so big in a relationship or in a friendship or at work. They explode. Why? Because all those smalls and mediums built up into this giant heap of shit that they can't keep down anymore. And maybe that anger is squirting out onto people around them. They're always bitter. They're always responding with anger. They're always upset. They're always pissed off, right? That's because they didn't get all the smalls and mediums out. And so they're squirting out on people they claim to love the most. And they act justified. Feelings don't fucking matter. Really, that you're such a dick. Obviously, your feelings do matter. Your dickhead feelings matter, and you're ruining it for the rest of us. But guys don't feel justified until it's huge. And what do? Explode. Has it occurred to you that maybe a better solution is to have the balls to say when your feelings have been hurt, when it's small, or when it's medium, or when you're upset? You know, sweetheart, I need you to please stop focusing on what you think is wrong with me. I'm working on fixing me. You work on fixing you. Please stop telling me what's wrong with me. And that's just one example. I had a client a week ago telling me, you know, my wife's always telling me what's wrong with me, what's wrong with me. It's just like, I'm sick of that shit. Well, then say something. Say it kindly, but firmly and so forth. This whole packing it down shit doesn't work. And so the person in your comment then, Rob, was saying, that they let the red flags go and then they exploded and the relationship ended.
Actually, what the person is saying is, what if they don't address the red flags? It continues to the point where you're so frustrated, you blow up.
No. I get it. But you shouldn't. I mean, you do what you want. It's your life, right? But if you lay the red flag in front of them, if you call them out on how they have hurt you, how they have insulted you, how they've hurt your feelings, how they've mistreated you, if you call them out and they do not change, if they do not apologize, if they do not change, one is the beginning of a pattern. Two is the real beginning of a pattern. If it happens, if you let it go past two times or three times, honestly, if I let someone do something more than twice, You know, the first time I laid out, hey, that hurt my feelings, you know, when you said those things. Or if they're rude to people or whatever, and you call them out or, you know, whatever, and they don't change, then it's on me. Then I'm allowing that red flag to get bigger. Remember, small things become big things. And if I don't call it out, then that shit's on me. It's my own fault. So why wait until I explode? Why keep overlooking it and overlooking it? Why not just have the balls to address it when it's small so that small things don't become big things? All right. Next question. Stephanie says something really interesting, a question and a comment. She says, this over on TikTok. Stephanie says, what does it feel like to actually be loved? I don't think I ever have been. Ugh. Unfortunately, I see this a lot. People who grew up in homes where there wasn't love, where there wasn't affirmation, where there was cold, where there was neglect, or even where there was just raw, unfiltered, bad directed at the child and criticism, maybe abuse, what have you. And so I'm sorry, Stephanie, truly, that you're a grown woman and you've never experienced it. And I'm sorry for that. But you asked the question, what does it feel like to actually be loved? To actually be loved. A lot of people are going to describe what it feels like to get that love from another person. And it is wonderful and it's beautiful. And but you'll never, if you're getting it from another person, and this borders on the cliche, and I don't care. If you're getting love from another person, but you don't love yourself first, that love you get from the other person will feel great, but it'll never be enough. That's why I titled the book, There's a Hole in My Love Cup, because that love is just going to pour through you. And you're going to be addicted to it like you're addicted to a drug, okay? When I was growing up in the 80s, it was cocaine. Everybody was addicted to cocaine. Why? Because it just was, it was never enough. It was never enough, right? And so what does it feel like to actually be loved? Actual love starts with a place of calm inside of myself where I've finally done the work of healing myself and pulling out all of the past messages that told me I was dog shit or unlovable or unwanted or no good. And when you pull those out, there's something magical that happens inside. And it's as real as the nose on the end of my face, all right? And real as the sun rising in the east. And I've seen it a million times if I've seen it once in 30 years of counseling people. And that is a calm comes over you. And you no longer need it. You no longer even crave it per se. I'm sure you can want it. But the love comes from within. And this beautiful thing springs up from inside that even if I never have it, it's okay. I love being alone. And it's when we have that superpower. I just had a client yesterday realize that they had this superpower. A grown woman realized that I've spent my whole life running from aloneness. I was alone as a child, and I've spent my whole life running from aloneness, scared of aloneness. And she realized, now I love being alone. She still wants a relationship and so forth, but she says, I've been running from it. And it only hit her just yesterday. I actually enjoy being alone. So my point is that love starts from within. And cliche as that sounds, it's true. And it comes from a place of calm. It comes from a place that I no longer have all those voices inside saying I suck. And then this sort of peace that passes all understanding just sort of warms us from within. And then when you're getting love from a person from the outside, it's the most beautiful thing. And you're giving love back. What it's like to give love. We all love to give love, but to give it from a full cup versus an empty cup, it's a whole different experience. Maybe that didn't answer the question, but anyway, I've got another one over here. How do I accept help and love from others again after narcissistic abuse? So after you've been in a relationship with an extreme taker who took and took and took and took advantage and took for granted, how do I open up again is what you're really asking and accept love and help from others. Another, it's a trust issue. What you're really talking about is how do I trust again that you're not going to hurt me? That if I take your love and acceptance and give it, that you're not going to just take and take and take. And how do you do that? Two things. One, in order to restore trust, I have to eliminate the pain. I have to flush out the pain that came from being in that relationship. And you do that by going inside and journaling and writing letters and all the stuff I talk about in my book, There's a Hole in My Love Cup, okay? Flushing all that crap out because it's all those fears and all that pain that are blocking your natural inclination to trust. Children naturally trust. Their natural state is to trust. We naturally trust. What causes us to distrust, on at least at an unhealthy level, is when we've got so much pain and fear inside of us. So you got to get all that out. The second piece is, if in order to learn to open up a little more and a little more and a little more, unlike a child who just puts it all out there right away. As adults, we learn it's judicious. As teenagers, we learn it is judicious. It is wise to just go in pieces. You know, open up a little bit, then see how they respond, then open up a little bit more if it feels safe, and a little bit more and a little bit more. Where we corrupt our relationships is when we stop opening up, or we never open up to begin with. What it requires to reestablish that comfort with opening up when you've been in a relationship with someone who was an extreme taker, what it takes is to open up a little bit and see how it feels. And it's always to push yourself a little bit to open up a little bit more. Well, but I'm scared, Sven. Okay, then you're not doing the other piece, which is flushing out all the pain and all the fears. And it's okay to have a healthy fear. But if that is keeping you closed up, keeping you from radical honesty is opening up a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. But that's the challenge. Then you, if you're not doing that, you need to flush out more so that you can open a little more. Because when you meet someone, you don't have to open it all up at once. And you don't have to open it when it feels unsafe yet. But if is the unsafety coming from outside of me or from inside of me? Because if it's coming from inside of me, then I have more self-work to do. Okay. Right. Much more to come right after this short break.
I came across the book, There's a Hole in My Love Cup, on badasscounseling.com. I was trying to gain some insight into my past experiences and how they're shaping my present. Sick of being miserable all the time, and I wanted to do the work. I didn't know how. Sven's book made it approachable. He had gone through a lot in life, and I liked his perspective. I started looking forward to the new podcasts on Thursdays and Sundays. I realized I wasn't alone, and we can all use a little help from Sven.
This show provides soul counseling intended to entertain and inform and is not medical advice. Now, back to the badass.
Good to have you back, badasses. Let's get to work. I'm going to go bang, bang, bang with three right in a row here. It's Maya, 95, says, I'm 28, female. Relationship with my parents at home is terrible, in all capital letters. It's based on performance. What to do? Well, first of all, Maya, and I know this is going to seem like the obvious one, and I know this isn't telling you anything you don't know, but get the fuck out. Do everything in your power to build up the money to get the fuck out. Rely on friends. Rent a room in an apartment. You don't necessarily, maybe don't need to have a whole apartment or whatever. The times, the years, over the years that when I was younger that I would rent a room rather than a whole apartment just to make my life easier so I could spend more time writing and not spend so much time trying to earn money to pay for a fucking apartment. But whatever, A, get the fuck out. B, detach as much as you can. Create safe space for yourself. And a lot of people say, oh, safe space, that's dumb. No, it's not fucking dumb. It's protecting yourself. It's doing what you need to do for your own soul. Furthermore, you need to begin to live authentically. But you're going to get pushback, and it's going to be harder, harder, harder. So maybe if you can't begin living authentically, and the different, what I mean by authentically is where you are judging your worth, quite apart from what they say, you're judging your worth based on your being, who you are, and your doing. Because I know I get some of my worth out of what I do. I take great pride in what I do. But it's not just the doing. Whereas you're being judged on your doing, 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 achieving, accomplishing, right? You need to begin to detach yourself mentally. And that comes from you doing the inner work. Okay, Maya? You got to do the inner work on you. So if you're stuck there, you should be spending every motherfucking chance you got doing the inner work that I keep talking about, like my book, There's a Hole in My Love Cup, or my newest book, Badass Wisdom, and using those as tools. And I list 9 other books in my book that you can use as tools, but you need to be working on you to be pulling out those voices that fundamentally say your worth is what you do. I mean, that's what a lot of men have been taught their whole lives. I know a fuck ton of women too. Don't get me wrong, but it's very much a guy thing, at least in America. Your worth is what you do. Fuck that shit. And unfortunately, for millennia, a woman's worth was what she looked like. That's just as fucking wrong. Right? But the bottom line is you've got to find your own sense of worth by getting out all the other voices, determining how your worth is, well, determined. All right. And by the way, the Spanish version of Love Cup, There's a Hole in My Love Cup, Spanish version coming out in the next few weeks, both on audio and on paperback. And the question here, I'm finally okay at 54 with being alone, but I still crave physical touch like hugs. Absolutely. Absolutely nothing wrong with craving physical touch. That's what friends are for. That's what family, if you're close with your family, is for. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to date. There's nothing wrong with dating. It's fantastic. It's wonderful. If you want to date, if it feels right, go for that. But hugs are beautiful. Hugs are fantastic. And just parenthetically, on this notion of friends and hugs and so forth, have any of you ever had the experience of you reach a point in life where some of your friendships are closer than family? So many people are afraid to walk away from family because I'll be alone. Yeah, but then once you start doing the work on yourself and you find your own space, whether it's geography or whatever it is, and you start developing friendships that are much more powerful than any family relationship ever was, or at least as good, that's a powerful fucking experience. To have those types of friendships is such a fucking blessing. And last one in this role here is discard after 20 years. Now he is successful. Years of hell, yes, and you need to be flushing all that shit out. Right. Rob, your turn. You got something for me?
I have two with a similar theme of spouses who are unresponsive. The first one is this. I'm married to a vet with PTSD. He seems to have a porn preference over real life. How do I talk to him about this? He has gotten very defensive when I brought it up. And the other one says, how do you get your spouse of 25 years to open up to you and be honest? And every time you try to talk to them, they feel attacked and shut down.
Right. Right. Very often, if someone is feeling attacked, it's one of two things or two of two things. One, it's their own shit from the past. Like I was talking about before with regard to dating, you know, this idea of opening up. Well, is this really about me or is it about them? Is this my shit? And so in a case like this where someone has sensitivities, and for a lot of people, there are sensitivities around porn, whether it's someone else engaging in porn that I'm in a relationship with or even one's own usage of porn, there's a lot of shame around that, all right? And whether justified or unjustified isn't the point. The point is they're feeling shame, and so it's a sensitive issue. I mean, think about it. Anything you feel shame about in your life or from your past, aren't you sensitive about? Of course you are. Okay, of course you are. And it's quite possible, and I'm not saying it is because I don't know your situation, it's quite possible that you have aided that person becoming more sensitive. Perhaps there has been blame or shame that you have added on to the equation. And if so, you coming in now in any form to talk about, in the case of the first person, that porn usage, that person perceives is going to likely perceive you as coming in hot. Right? And they're going to go on the defensive instantly. I know if I feel someone's coming in hot, I get defensive. It's like, fuck you. Right? Well, regardless of what the topic is. But porn, of course, has its own sensitivities around it. I would encourage you to either A, go at it again, and I'll tell you how, or B, put it in writing if you think they might be more receptive to that. But at some point, the message that I would use to convey something like that is, sweetheart, I love you. I do. And I don't want you to feel like I am shaming you regarding your porn use. I don't want you to feel that way. And if I have, I am sorry. I'm sorry. And that's not okay on my part to shame you for something you're doing. The other piece of it is I want to talk about how I feel and that your porn usage makes me feel X, Y, or Z, makes me feel unwanted, makes me feel whatever your feelings might be and laying those out. And it's doing it as calmly as you can. Now, they may still go hot. And in fact, it's likely that they're going to go hot. They're going to get upset. They're going to get pissed off and they're not going to want to talk about it. Or in the case of the second person, how do you get through to someone who instantly gets defensive? It's the same fucking thing, just a different fucking topic. You go in gentle, you go in kind, you go in gentle and just calm and express your needs. Keep it simple and talk about your feelings with as little attacking or criticism of them as possible. Because they're just going to go hot again. But the other, and then what you do, you watch their response, but you can probably guess their response, can't you? And the truth is, if someone doesn't want to listen, even have the rational conversation, I don't mean to be rude, but to a large degree, that relationship's fucked. If you can't even discuss the things that are sensitive to you, and if they can't discuss it or won't discuss the things that are sensitive to them, that's when the callousness starts to really take over a relationship. That's when even greater distancing happens, right? And this is why beginnings of a relationship are so fucking critical, because the relationship didn't start at the point of you two being white hot with each other. It started at whatever age with much more likelihood of being able to talk about stuff. But one or two persons didn't do it, didn't want to do it for whatever reason. So now you're at this point. And the truth is, you know, and recommending, hey, let's go get a mediator. Let's go get a counselor. Let's go have someone we can talk about with this. But the other thing you got to be doing on your side of the equation is, what are my fucking issues here? I'm a real big believer. I had a saying on the wall back in, I remember in my first home that I owned back in Minneapolis. And I had it in a frame and someone had sort of put the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, you know, from mathematics, physics, put it into a layman's terms to apply outside of physics. And the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, put in these sort of layman terms and regarding human relationships, was simply this: I must constantly remind myself that I am part of the problem that I am trying to solve. And I like that. I like that. Now, it's very easy to allow that we let some people use that against us, and you can't go there either, that there has to be accountability on both sides, right? But when you're healthy, you can look at not only what the other person is doing, but how am I contributing to this fucking problem? And there are going to be times when you're really not. And you can be honest in that, but are you just as honest in the times that you really are? Fuck, I'm the problem here. Yeah, I had to apologize to my girlfriend just Thursday. And so today's Saturday. For me to go 2 days without having to apologize for something, it's a golden week. I'm doing so well. I'm proud of myself. Good boy, Sven. But no, I had to apologize. And, you know, and she didn't expect it. It caught her off guard just because it came so fast. And she said, Sven, you're not listening on this and you are acting so unprofessionally. Oh, that's what it was. We were in a meeting, a Zoom meeting with the woman that runs all my SEO stuff for the website and so on and so forth. And my girlfriend and I, who does, you know, serious work for the business and so forth, we're three of us in three separate locations on this Zoom meeting, and she's bringing up stuff regarding the podcast. And I'm like, we already decided this, blah, blah, blah. And it's just frustrating me. And I said, I can't handle this today. I don't have the bandwidth. I said, you guys finish this meeting. I checked out of the meeting and walked out and went out and shoveled snow while I was counseling a friend of mine who needed help right in the minute. And she shouted to me, you know, on her phone on the side. She's like, that was so unprofessional. What are you doing? And afterwards, after she had come out of the meeting, I got on right away and I said, and she said, what were you doing? I said, that was so unprofessional. You were 100% right. And there was no fucking excuse for that. That was just dumb. I said, I was feeling like we didn't need to be talking about this right now because it didn't concern our SEO person, blah, 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 blah. But I caught her off guard that I was apologizing that quickly and that I was naming that she was right. And I just called it out. Boom, boom, boom. You're right. You're right. You're right. So if I'm doing something wrong in a situation, I have no problem saying I apologize. And one of the greatest compliments my own mother ever said to me was, Sven, you know, I have wonderful kids. Each is different in each way. And one of the things I love the very most about you, my mother said this when I was like in my 20s, she said, is you are so quick to apologize and you mean it. And that's one of the highest compliments I've ever gotten in my entire life. I take that very seriously, owning my shit, but I also hold the other person accountable. Are you holding in your relationships? So I've now expanded from that question, but to all of us now, are you owning your shit? And are you simultaneously refusing to own shit that ain't yours? And that's a great relationship is when two people are doing that. Now you got a kick-ass fucking relationship. Robbie, go. You got one for me, Daddy-O?
First of all, you got an online amen.
Amen!
During that response. Here's one for you I'm sure you'll like.
All right. I'm all jacked up a Mountain Dew.
All right, good.
All right.
That should help.
All right.
How does one become a soul counselor? What kind of training is needed?
I'll be very, very honest with you. There, at least in the United States, in most places, there is no like licensure for soul counseling. I come out of, I'm former clergy. I had a bachelor's degree in mathematics and religious studies, world religions. I have a master's degree in divinity, including training in all forms of counseling, multiple forms of counseling. I studied five different languages, you know, three of them dead languages. One partially dead, whatever. And so I just came out of clergy and I started the practice when I was young because I was just fucking good. My mom had taught me. She was an incredible listener who had a spiritual counseling practice of her own, largely in, you know, religious circles, but hers wasn't religious. It was just spiritual. My dad was a pastor. And so I'd grown up in that sort of milieu, but my mom made a deliberate effort when I was 12, 13, 14, when all my five older siblings were gone, we'd sit around the fucking dinner table and she's saying, okay, Sven, in what your father just said, what would be an active listening technique response? What would be a passive listening technique response? In the paragraph he just said, what was his main point? What was the message under the message? She taught me all this shit. Plus, she modeled it in my own problems in my life. So it was just natural. I never aspired to be a fucking therapist or to counsel people. Never aspired to that. It just fucking happened. But to answer your question, what sort of training do you go to? Honestly. And I get people saying this, well, Sven, how do I incorporate your method? Or Sven, how do I become a soul counselor or a spiritual counselor? You want to know what the real truth is? You want to know what enables me to do the work I do and help whatever small fraction of the population I can help brighten my corner of the world? It's simply this, that I did the work to heal myself. You want to know how to heal other people? Go into your own shit and go down so fucking far that they're all that's left below that is bedrock. And a lot of people say, well, I've done that. No, you haven't. No, you haven't. No, you haven't. If you're still having fucking major problems, you haven't been down to your bedrock. It means going to the dark, ugly places. I was in a 12-year suicidal depression and no therapist could help me. I couldn't find someone who could do the work faster than me, come up with questions that took me deeper. And I had to do it on myself and I found my own ways out. So all of my counseling technique per se, my methods per se, are the tools that I've created or stolen bits and pieces here and there from my own healing of self. And in some, for instance, in the field of psychology, in some strains of psychology, such as depth psychology, Jungian psychology, some other ones that I don't fucking know because I don't know any jack shit about psychology, they're required to, of course, do their own counseling or be in counseling. In fact, and that's most strains, but also their own dream analysis is common, particularly among the Jungians, I think. And but the more you work on yourself, not just have it worked on by an outside therapist 1 hour a fucking week or whatever, that's fucking, I mean, 1 hour a week is fucking nothing. I mean, you're diving down constantly into your own shit. Where's my pain source? What still sets me off? You want to know what you need to work on? Every single one of us. You want to know what you need to work on in your soul work? Just find what set you off today. Made you angry, made you sad, made you upset, disappointed. Boom, done. That's where you need to be counseling yourself this week. That's where you need to be journaling. That's where you need to be going in. All right, you want to become a soul counselor? Go inside and heal yourself. And nothing, nothing, nothing will make you more powerful than that. Experience life. If you are not following your own passions and your own dreams, come hell or high water, you are not ready to be a soul counselor. Why? Because you haven't mastered your own soul. You're still listening to the other fears, voices, messages from your own past. Well, how the fuck are you going to heal somebody who's struggling with the exact same thing if you haven't been through it and found your way out of, gotten all those messages out of you? Do your own healing work. Do it on yourself and you will become extraordinarily powerful because you'll be able to speak to the problems that others have. The great American psychologist, he was a professor at Harvard. What was his name?
I looked it up while editing. It was Carl Rogers.
He made a lot of very pithy quotes, but he said, that which is most personal is most universal. Think about that. Think about art. Think about your musicians that go the deepest and just have these powerful messages that are coming from their own experience. And you can feel their fucking pain, their pathos. You can feel what they're saying. Why? Because they've gone to their deepest point, their most personal point, and they're putting it into words. They're putting it into sounds. They're putting it into dance. They're putting it into a painting. And it reverberates like a string inside a grand piano. It reverberates inside of you. Why? It's so personal that it's universal. That all of us at the core, at our most personal, we are experiencing the same things. And if you can get down there and experience that yourself and to heal yourself of the pains that are corrupting your own connection with your own self, then you have the ability to speak to the very same thing in other people by naming your shit. I had a woman reach out to me this week. She said, Sven, I'm a therapist, but I'm just new to this online stuff. What do I do? And I said, put shit out there for free that speaks from your own experience, from down in your depths, your soul. Teach them what you have seen inside of your own self, and people will eat it up. Why? Because it's shit they're maybe afraid to do or don't know how to do or whatever. Anyway, I got to move on. Next question.
Sven, just for a second, speak about the integration, let's say, of getting a master's of social work and incorporating the sort of technique you're just talking about.
Yeah. I'm master's in social work, master's in any sort of counseling. Hell, you don't even need a degree to do what I do. You don't. What you need, incorporating my stuff into your work, if you already are a counselor or a therapist, my simple thing would be heal thyself. Do that. Do that. And you want to know what will happen? You'll become more aggressive in your questioning. Aggressive in a good way, okay? You will become more understanding. Your vessel. Now, stay with me here, people. One of the things I talk about, there's a video on the landing page of my website where I talk about finding counseling and how finding a good counselor can be hard and so on and so forth. And one of the things you're looking for or wanting, whether you're aware of it or not, you know how many people I've had come to me say, I got booted from my last therapist because they couldn't handle my problems, okay? And you're looking for a vessel large enough. Imagine like a big fucking salad bowl. Okay, big one, and a vessel large enough to contain your problems. I don't mean contain it like keep it down. I mean to hold it, that this person you are sitting in from for counseling is big enough to handle your shit. You want to be a large vessel in your counseling. You want to be able to do, and this is what I do. You give me anything. I've had people who have lost children. I have people who have killed in war, had to take the life of a friend, a mercy kill, had all sorts of shit. The calls I've gotten from friends and people, you know, police officer Sven, I've got my service revolver in one hand and a bottle of Jack Daniels in the other. I'm ready to end it, Sven. Shit like that. I don't even tell. I ask me how many suicide shit I've had over the years. You know, why? In part, because I've got 9-inch scars running up my forearms. Because I was in 12-year suicidal depression. I committed suicide. Okay. So I just took my life experience and I mined it and I went into it and I went into it into all my pains. And regardless of what your degree is in, whatever your background is in, you want to become a powerful force in the world. Heal your own shit. Go into the scariest, ugliest, nastiest stuff where the biggest fucking dragons are inside of you. Go there with trepidation, with fear, with whatever, your knees are trembling, keep going into that cave. The cave you most fear to enter holds the treasure you seek. Keep going into that. Keep healing. Keep flushing. Keep finding those core messages that you were taught as a child. And if you think you got them, there's probably something deeper. If you can identify them right out of the bat, you can't identify what the real ones are. And keep going deeper. And you will begin to grow lighter. You will begin to grow calmer inside. You will operate from a different place in life. You will have a strength that you did not know existed. Things will begin to fall out of the sky that you could not have seen coming. And this isn't just fucking kumbaya fucking bullshit. This is real shit. And I see it every fucking day and I see it every fucking year for 30 years. I love you guys, but you got to do the work, man. All right, I'm going to take one or two more here. Stephanie asks a question. She says, how do you face the fear of going deep when you're doing it alone? To be very honest with you, doing it alone, I personally believe, because I had to do it, I had to get myself out of a 12-year suicidal depression. I believe in healing yourself alone very, 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 very much. I believe you can move so much faster alone. I believe you can go places that you can't go in a one-hour fucking session of therapy. There's just no time. And most one-hour sessions of therapy aren't even 1 hour anymore. They're 50 minutes. And I understand the therapist's dilemma. It's like, you got to, you know, and not out of cruelty or because, but you just, you kind of got to keep it going. But it's like, fuck, man, 50 minutes. And some therapists, it's 45 minutes. It's like, oh my God. I used to do that. And I'd be just getting in a zone, man, just starting to open up. And therapists would say, hey, Sven, sorry, man, but time's up. It's like, fuck, fuck you. Fuck this method. I know you're a good guy or a fine woman, but fuck. Do it on your own, man. So you ask the question, how do you do it on your own? How do you do it on your own? How do you face the fear? Start small. If you're doing it on your own and you got to face the fears of doing it on your own and being doing it alone, start small. Because what's going to happen, starting small is just like going into the gym. You're not going to start with some big fucking workout with heavy weights if you haven't worked out in 20 years or you've never worked out in your life or you're 200 pounds overweight or whatever. No, you start small. Small is good. I have the most respect in any gym, and I've been lifting since I was 11, since Schwarzenegger was still competing. Since my first workout was 1978, 40 whatever fucking years I've been doing this shit, all right? But you want to know who I respect the most in the gym? It's not the big, strong, tough women or the, you know, ripped guys. No, it's the ones that are 200 pounds overweight. The ones that have bad knees, that are, you know, tripod shaped or whatever, that are in there. I have so much respect for those people. That's like trying to come out from under, you know, $200,000 worth of debt on a, you know, because your business went tits up, whatever. I just respect somebody in there. Start small. How do you do it when you're alone? How do you face the fear of going deep inside yourself when you're alone? Start small. You don't have to go all the way into the cave today. Go a little bit in, pull out some of the smaller fears, journal them the fuck out. All right, catch your breath. There's no rush. But if you have the right tools, yes, you can go faster. And there's something about the right tools that make you feel confident. And that's why I wrote my book, There's a Hole in My Love Cup. It's to hold your hand through the process. And by the way, I'm likely going to be going up into the mountains to begin work on the sequel to Love Cup. Be gone for like a month, but I'm still taking clients and we're still doing the fucking podcast. So Rob, what say ye?
I've got a good one here, I think. And it's a very polite listener. Okay. How do I get out of my shell? I have a very hard time standing up for myself. Please and thank you. I love your work.
Yeah, and this is very common. And this idea of coming out of your shell, I actually see it a lot in, interestingly, across all the spectrum, across all economic spectrums and careers and so forth. Some of the most successful people I work with who in their work seem to be type A, are same shell type of person. You're asking, how do I come out of my shell? Honestly, what is keeping you in your shell is fear and pain. That's the shell, all right? It's that shell. It's those walls. It's being created by fear because you've had pain in your past and the fear of it happening again. Because in your past, not just pain, you've had messages put into you, whether intentionally or unintentionally, explicitly or implicitly, denying your worth. And so the way you come out of the shell is by going in to origins. What created this fear? Where has this come from? And what are the fears? So again, it's journaling. It's writing letters you don't send. It's using these tools to go in and determine, okay, well, what is this fear? And going into it, writing it out, determining, digging deeper. Yeah, but where's that coming from? But why do I feel that only in these situations? Oh, because there's something about that situation that makes me feel it. Whereas in this other situation, I don't. You have to go into this shit. It's like any problem. You know, if you're at work and you're discovering that, gosh, why is this particular product not selling? Why is this product not selling? You know, all of our other products are selling. Why is this book that, you know, we're a book company. Why is this book not selling? Or we're a widget company. Why is this one not selling? Well, you know, what, we change a production on it. And so the strength of that particular thread, of that particular screw on that particular product isn't as strong and it's been breaking. Oh. Well, if we don't go down to determine, okay, why did we change that the makeup of that screw? Why did we change that screw to begin with? Well, in other words, if you don't drill down to the real root of the problem, then any solution you create is a half solution. Does that make sense? It's especially the same way in our own personal work. If you're just saying, well, I'm just going to change my behaviors and then everything's going to be okie dokie. So many young guys have been getting this shit their whole lives, but especially nowadays with social media, there's so many of these fucking 35-year-old fucking peckerhead men on there saying, you got to toughen up and it's willpower and focus on just the good and you got to be tougher. And it's just the same bullshit men have always been getting. And it doesn't fucking work, because bring that same 35-year-old guy who's telling 20-year-old boys what they should be doing. And you know, the 20-year-olds can't blame them. They're looking for advice from somebody a little bit older who seems cool or whatever. Tell him, bring that same 35-year-old guy to me when he's 50 and he has three kids and his teenage daughter hates his fucking guts. Or when his business fucking crashed. Or when. Willpower only lasts so fucking long. And the bottom line is, there is going to come the day when you're going to have to drill down and figure out what is the root of the problem. We solve problems by finding what the root is. And if you're in a fucking shell, it's because you are terrified. You are terrified of getting hurt, and that is a result of A, past pain, and B, past beliefs that you've been taught about yourself that were never true to begin with. You've been taught to hate yourself, believe you're unlovable, unwantable, that if people see the real you, surely they'll reject you, and all that is bullshit. I got to tell you, you know, when you were a child, you didn't come out of the womb hating yourself, thinking you were unlovable, unwantable. That means somewhere between your mother's vagina and right now, you've been taught that you suck, that people aren't going to like you, and it was never true to begin with. You've been conditioned to believe it. And maybe you've even engaged in some behaviors that confirm that message you first got. If you teach a, you know, tease a child because they're a klutz. Oh, Susie's such a klutz. Oh, Sue, you're, boy, you can never even stand straight on your own two feet. Eventually, Susie's going to start stumbling. You'll become a self-fulfilling prophecy. But the original messaging that we receive creates the reality later. And so we've got to uncreate. We've got to deconstruct. I have two tattoos on the backs of my triceps. One of them says create. The other one says destroy. Anybody who's ever written a book knows that it's not about the writing. It's about the editing. It's about the destruction. We have to be willing to deconstruct things before we can reconstruct them better. I'm going to take one last comment, and I've got it queued up right in front of me. Unless you had something else on that, Rob? Okay. And this one is from LA Native X310 on TikTok. You guys are going to love this. LA Native X310 says, if he or she is, or they are still even there, this is the kind of comment you leave when you drop it and run, says, you have no clue what you talk about. It's an illusion. Yes. Well, LA Native, is that your best shot? Dude, I got five older fucking siblings. I've been told that shit since I was a kid. You don't know shit, Sven. Go run along, peckerhead. Hey, let's play Ditch Sven. All these things telling me I have no clue what I'm talking about. You know what? And there are people for whom my stuff that I say or my teachings or what my stuff doesn't work. It just doesn't connect with them, or they don't feel, you know, they've tried it. Maybe it just doesn't vibe. And that's okay. That's okay. I don't claim to have some cure-all for every person, right? And the truth is, the people that it resonates for. And that's true of anybody's teaching. Anybody who claims to have the universal truth and only they have it. I have it. No one else does. It's just like a little full of yourself today there, big guy. So anyway, yes, I am full of it. It's all a fucking illusion. Why you fucking people are listening to me is beyond me. No. Just trying to help. Just bloom where you're planted, right? So fine, humans. On behalf of the Badass Counseling crew, including KC in the booth and Rob the Rocket sitting next to me at the mixing board, Have a kick-ass day.
The Badass Counseling Show is strictly copyrighted. No copies may be made without the express written consent of the Badass Counseling Show, LLC. The Badass Counseling Show is produced by Karen Camparelli and Robert H. Friedman. Executive producer, Sven Erlandson. Original music by two-time Emmy Award-winning composer, Trevor Morris. Have a kick-ass day.